show me a grape, crush me some ice, skin me a peach, save the fuzz for my pillow. Talk to me nice, talk to me nice, you've got to wine me and dine me. Don't try to fool me, beat you me, either amuse me or lose me. I'm getting hungry, peel me a grape.
Welcome to another week of Whitley on Wine. I'm your host, Robert Whitley, and I'm joined in the studio today by guest co-host Lisa Redwine. Welcome, Lisa.
Well, thank you so much.
So I'm hoping that we can make this sort of a, if not a regular thing, a semi-regular thing, where you come in and help out with the show. Lisa is general manager and sommelier at the Shores Restaurant in La Jolla.
Absolutely.
And a member of the Quartermaster of Sommeliers.
Uh-huh.
And you're kind of excited about our guest that we're going to be chatting with a little bit later. You have some background with them.
Oh, absolutely. I actually, probably unbeknownst to them, one of their employees, Trey Blankenship, I actually went to culinary school with about 15 years ago. And just through the years, I've always had a great connection with Phelps Winery. And it really, they've always made fantastic wines. My first journey to Napa once I had graduated from culinary school was to take a course in Mediterranean wine influence. And Joseph Phelps, that's when their Minstrel program was full board, and their Viognier and all of
that. So you've tipped our hand. We have as our guest today
Bill
Phelps, the owner of Phelps Winery, and also Freestone Vineyards, which is really the main the main focus of our conversation today, and the winemaker from Freestone, Teresa Heredia. Welcome, Teresa and Bill.
Hi.
Thank you very much for inviting us.
Let me give you a little background here. I got some samples a few weeks ago, a few months ago, something like that, of the Freestone wines, and I hadn't really experienced them before. I in traveling up through Napa and Sonoma, I tasted some of your wines from Freestone under the Fog Dog label, but I hadn't actually had the Freestone wines, and I was quite intrigued by both the Chardonnay and the Pinot Noir, which is, you know, that's your focus there. You're over in Sonoma County, Sonoma Coast, Russian River area, and I was anxious to chat with you guys about the philosophy, because I think this is a great direction for wine in general, but specifically for California wine.
Yeah, thank you very much for the great comments. We're really excited.
Bill, I understand that you wanted to talk a little bit about the project and about your father.
Well, I'll speak very briefly about that just to set the stage, but I think I know Teresa would love to talk a little bit about the stylistic evolution of the wines. I'm a second-generation vintner. My dad, Joe Phelps, started Joseph Phelps Vineyards 36 years ago. And we, about 10 years ago, really in search of better sources of Chardonnay, began to look for land on the Sonoma coast, believing that this was the new frontier and the place to look for Burgundian, for land for Burgundian varietals. And we evolved from starting out with that into going after the exciting new world of Pinot Noir, and bought some land out here on the Sonoma coast in about 10 years ago, and began planning, and then decided to build a winery building and finished that winery last year just in time for the 2007 harvest. So we have a complete independent Burgundian domain out here on the Sonoma coast called Freestone Vineyards, and we're really excited about it.
Well, you know, I was going to ask you about that and, you know, the philosophy behind the winery. I know, you know, Duckhorn a few years ago started its Golden Eye out in Anderson Valley, rather than bring the Pinot Noir over to Napa Valley and make it at their facility in Napa Valley. And now, you know, you always made a Chardonnay at Phelps Vineyard, but you've decided to build a separate winery. And I wonder what the thought was behind that.
Well, the philosophy was to move the Chardonnay program out of the Napa Carneros region and out of the St. Helena facility over here to the coast, where cool climate varieties thrive, like Chardonnay and Pinot Noir, for example. So in 2004, we made the very last of the Ovation Chardonnay with the goal of bringing up the Freestone brand as well as transferring over the Ovation label to the Sonoma Coast and to have our own facility over here, totally separate from Joseph Phelps Vineyards, where we can actually focus on the quality at hand.
Sure. So, go ahead.
The philosophy of the winemaking is to try and capture the essence of the site with all natural techniques, including native primary and secondary fermentation. So, in essence, the philosophy is to practice a little bit of biodynamic techniques, gravity flow in the winery, and, like I said, just native, trying not to add any acid to the wines, trying to do minimal manipulation to the wines at all, and just capture the purity of the site.
Well, you know, and I'd like to bring Lisa into the conversation here. She hasn't tasted the wines, but she's heard about them. But from her perspective as a sommelier, I know that from what I know about your palate, Lisa, that this kind of wine that's driven by terroir and has minerality and it's not over the top, you know, ripe fruit. It's something that is very exciting for you.
Well, absolutely. You know, when you work in a dining room, oftentimes wine isn't a solo performance. Wine is an accompaniment to dinner. And when you have a lot of these really over-oaked or really extracted wines, it makes them really difficult to pair with food. And, you know, really when you have that pure expression of the fruit, it makes it a lot more exciting, not only, you know, to enjoy before dinner or, you know, with a plate of cheese, but really to work into a part of your dining experience.
Sure.
What was really the... You know, what drove you to choose that style? I mean, you know, right now I was reading over some of your tasting notes and the alcohol percentages I notice are really, you know, they're lower than a lot of Pinot Noirs out there.
The oak percentages?
No, alcohol.
Oh, alcohol percentages. Well, that's the goal, and that goes right hand in hand with what the philosophy is. It's to try and capture the purity. And I don't think that it's a bad thing necessarily to have high alcohol. I think there are some tremendous wines out there from this region and as well that actually capture the site. But I think that the best way to show the precision, the focus, and the purity of the fruit is to try and make wines that are right around 14% or less alcohol.
Mm-hmm.
I think that the fruit just sings. It shines through the spice characteristics, the native black tea characteristics, and those subtle floral aromas that you get in wines that are less ripe just shine through it at those alcohol levels at less than 14%.
And Teresa, you know, one of the things that, you know, I gave this wine a very good review in my Creator Syndicate column and also at Wine Review Online. I think I gave it a rating of 96 points. It's one of the best Chardonnays I think I've tasted out of California in years. And I won't say the best, but, you know, certainly up there with some of the better, you know, Kistler and Patson Hall and Sonoma Cutrer and whatnot. Really just a terrific wine. And I was very impressed with the structure of the wine. I think that this is a California Chardonnay that not only has a lot going for it now, but it will be even better 5 years down the road.
Thank you so much. That's a tremendous compliment that you give. It's exactly what we're trying to achieve. The backbone of minerality and acid. And in 2006, that was a great year for capturing natural acidity. It was a long, cool growing season. It took a long time for the grapes to reach maturity. Some of the local vineyards, some of our neighbors had some issues with botrytis, but we were lucky and really proactive in treating the vineyards. So we had grapes that were in immaculate condition with nice, fresh, crunchy skins and really plump, juicy, naturally acidic grapes. So it made it really easy for the winemaking task to try and capture that backbone of minerality.
Well, let me ask you something. Do you feel that in making a wine like this, in which you're kind of bucking the trend of the fat, oily, buttery Chardonnays like Rombauer, like ZD, that you are bucking the trend, or do you think the pendulum is swinging the other way toward these wines and there's a greater acceptance of this style now?
I absolutely think it's swinging. There are more producers out there who are trying to make both Chardonnay and Pinot Noir with lower alcohol and more acid-driven wines.
And Lisa's shaking her head, nodding in agreement. Are you finding that your customers are responding to this?
Absolutely. And, you know, the other thing that I'm finding, too, you know, there are exceptions. People who love Rombauer, they love Rombauer. You can't sell them anything else.
True.
That's what they like. But what I am finding is that there's a great interplay now between the usage of oak and acidity, where it's still, you can still taste it. You can, you know, it's palatable in the wine, but it's a whole lot more balanced. And, you know, that's a nice change to see, where it's not so oaky that that's the dominant flavor profile mm-hmm. for the Chardonnay. Mm-hmm. You know, I do have a question, you know, when I was just reading again over the notes. Can you tell me what exactly the difference is between your Fog Dog Pinot Noir and then the Freestone Pinot Noir, and where the vineyard sources might be different?
Yes, actually, the Freestone Chardonnay, being the top tier, is all estate Chardonnay, mm-hmm. the Pinot Noir as well. And then the Ovation Chardonnay is sort of our middle ground, and we're targeting a slightly different style with that wine as well. But it will always end up being partially estate and partially grower mm-hmm. Chardonnay, so some different locations that we've purchased fruit from, Bacci Galuppi Vineyard being one of those examples.
Uh-huh.
And the other style difference is, with the Ovation, we're trying to do a slightly riper style, not a lot, still targeting less than 14% alcohol, but a slightly riper style, so a fatter mid-palate, and then we're focusing on lees stirring with that wine to try and capture something that's a little bit more in keeping with the traditional Ovation from Joseph Helps.
Teresa, that's been my impression of the Fog Dog, too, that it's a slightly fleshier style. But, I didn't taste them side by side, so I'm just kind of doing that out of my palate memory.
Mm-hmm. That would be true as well, because the Fog Dog Chardonnay is also sourced from both estate and mm-hmm. grower Chardonnay.
But the big gun is the Freestone.
We do less stirring. Yeah. We focus a little bit more of attention on stirring the Ovation mm-hmm. Chardonnay, because it is a higher wine. But the Fog Dog is intended to be a drink-me-now,
right.
young, fresh, vibrant, juicy, stone fruits, minerality.
And it is.
Also
it is.
Acid-driven.
I get it by the glass at Rutherford Grill over in Napa.
Oh, nice.
You know, it's great with a hamburger, I got to tell you. You know, it's delicious. Anyway, let's talk a little bit about the site, because it's so important. And I don't know if you want to address this, Teresa, or if Bill would like to address it, but how did you pick the site, and what is special about this particular terroir?
Well, I'll answer that, Robert. We found the site, mainly for its proximity to the coast. We're about 6 miles inland from the Pacific Ocean at Bodega as the crow flies, and it certainly is an area with a good deal of fog, although the fog typically most days will break around noon or so.
Mm-hmm.
We wanted an area where we could have the possibility of building a winery as well, so we wanted a fairly large site.
Had there been grapes there before?
There were one or two growers nearby, the Cleary family, and also the Michael Chalk family, who had sold its grapes to William Selyem, and I believe still does.
Mm-hmm.
They were a little bit ahead of us, but we're still considered very much pioneers in this area.
So you started from scratch, and you were able to pick your own clones and all the right material that you felt would fit this site.
We started completely from scratch. Mm-hmm. The land that we have here had been cleared a long time ago and was used as grazing land for cattle and other livestock prior to our purchase of it in 1999.
And Teresa, what about the terroir? What can you say about the terroir that affects the structure of the wine and the flavor profile?
Well, I think just with discussing terroir in general, it, you know, encompasses many different aspects, including, you know, sun exposure, the quantity of wind that we get, the type of wind, the temperatures in general, also the soil type, and Gold Ridge Series soil.
Mm-hmm.
So all those things affect the wine growing and the structure of the wines. I think that the diurnal effects, the cool nights and the warm, sunny afternoons during the growing season, it makes it's almost perfect growing conditions for Pinot Noir and Chardonnay in excellent years, like in 2006, for example. So all of that really provides the natural acidity, the minerality, and the structure of the wine. We naturally get a strong tannin backbone,
mm-hmm.
especially from our Quarter Moon Vineyard, which is in closer proximity to the coastal influence. And I would say flavor profiles for the terroir would be, in the Chardonnay, the rocky, mineral aspects that you get in the Freestone Chardonnay, for example, which is 100% estate Chardonnay.
Well, you know, one of the things that impressed me about the Pinot, Teresa, was mm-hmm. that you managed to avoid one of the perils of extremely cool climate viticulture. And also, this goes kind of hand in hand with the Burgundian style of winemaking of, you know, throwing the stems in. And you didn't have any of that stemminess, yet you made a wine that was lean. It was certainly ripe, but you know it. I won't call it austere, but it wasn't overripe. And you have firm tannins, but you don't have that bitter green characteristic that, unfortunately, I think we see in too many really cool climate Pinot Noirs.
Mm-hmm. That is something that ultimately, we as a winemaker, we really don't have a whole lot of control over it. But what you do have to do is play around with. I guess you have to think smart and do it intelligently if you're going to work with stems, for example.
Mm-hmm.
So you have to, you know, pick the blocks that have the riper, hardened stems. I don't mean brown
right.
by any means, but just pick the ones that are the most firm and crunchy, and then incorporate only small percentages.
And you obviously do that. You had a firm tannin structure, but like I said, I was very very impressed that you didn't have any of the bitter greenness. And not to pick on anyone, but some of the Pinots out of Santa Rita Hills, which is extremely cold, mm-hmm. I find have that kind of that bitterness on the back end that a lot of people believe will diminish with time, but I'm not quite certain that it does.
Mm-hmm. That'll be something that we have to evaluate down the road. But
5 years from now, yeah. So how is the project going? You started what? This was your second vintage of the Freestone?
Second vintage in the Freestone Winery, actually.
Mm-hmm.
The 2007 vintage was the inaugural harvest here at the new winery. But previously, the 2006 and the 2005 vintages, we produced all of the wines at Joseph Phelps Vineyards while the winery
okay.
was under construction.
So you were commuting?
I was.
Or maybe you were living over in Napa. That's kind of a hard commute to go to Russian River Sonoma Coast from St. Helena. But
I did that for a very short term. I did. I lived in Napa when I was mm-hmm. making the wines at Joseph Phelps Vineyard.
And
now I'm over here in this area. I live in Santa Rosa. And
What are the production levels for this wine? I mean, can we find it? Can we get it? Can Lisa get some for a restaurant? You know.
Absolutely.
I might mention, Lisa, thank you for the kind compliment about Trey Blankenship. Trey Blankenship is going to be working with getting the Freestone wines into restaurants in San Diego area as well as all over California, and I hope you'll hear from him soon. We have a wonderful guest center here about a mile away from the winery that's open for visitors on the weekend, and a terrific tasting opportunity. Certainly, we're starting up a wine club operation, and a mailing list operation, and getting the wines out to the public in that way.
Well, I should let you know, Trey's already called me about the wines, and he's actually told me about the project over the last couple of years. So, I'm excited to see some of it over at the Shores. But yeah, he is tremendous, and certainly excited to come see the winery. I love Freestone in that area, so.
You're welcome to come visit anytime. It would
Fantastic.
Be a delight.
And Bill, maybe you can explain a little bit. You know, I think I know the answer, but I would rather hear it come from your mouth. You know, there must have been a tremendous temptation when you're talking about sourcing fruit from Sonoma Coast, Russian River, wherever. You have this brand recognition for Joseph Phelps to put everything under the Joseph Phelps label, but you're kind of really reducing what you're making under the Joseph Phelps brand. And so can you explain the philosophy and the business decision to not,
call
it Joseph Phelps?
We fought long and hard about creating a separate brand and a separate identity for Freestone, and eventually decided that that was the way to go. I think that the world of wine today appreciates wines that really reflect their place of origin, and this is... Freestone is truly an independent domain, separate from Joseph Phelps in terms of its grape sources,
mm-hmm.
in terms of its winemaking style, in terms of all the equipment, which is designed specifically for the production of Burgundian varietals. And we really felt that to optimize what we were trying to do out here, it was best to create a separate freestanding domain. Even though I think from a business and marketing perspective, it might have been a little bit easier to put it under the Joseph Phelps umbrella, we think that in the long run, establishing Freestone as its independent domain is the way to go.
You know, you raised a question in my mind when you said it was built to handle the Burgundian varietals. But that area also is very conducive to other grape varieties. Is there any plan to do anything other than Chardonnay and Pinot Noir?
Not at this time. Teresa and I are laughing and smiling at one another because we're just right in the middle of launching this, and I think we feel that we've got our plates very full.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, you're absolutely right. There are some very noteworthy Syrahs, for instance, coming from nearby here. But our intent is to focus on Pinot Noir and Chardonnay.
We've dabbled here with a small amount of Pinot Gris, and it was actually a really amazing wine, but we decided to just focus on Pinot Noir and Chardonnay and make the best wine.
So might you have a little bit of that laying around somewhere if we happen to pop in?
I think there's maybe one case left.
Yeah. You know, we don't have much time left, but while we have you on the phone, you're at the end of the 2008 harvest. How did things go this year? Are you optimistic?
Very optimistic. 2008 was a different vintage. There was a heat spell that made it a little bit more challenging for, I think, every winemaker out in this area. But given that and accepting Mother Nature's hand that she's dealt me,
mm-hmm.
I think that we have some wines with amazing concentration. They'll be slightly riper than we would have anticipated in the 2006 vintage, for example.
Sure.
But we're still going to stick to close to 14% alcohol and nice concentration.
So it sounds to me like you really don't want to overly manipulate the wines. You're going to take what nature gave you that year.
That's correct. That's what we're going to try to do. And the Chardonnays in 2008 are actually going to be stellar. I'm so excited about them. We picked them all with low sugar, mostly natural acidity, and I think I can't wait to see what the quality is post fermentation.
Now, Lisa, do you have any questions about the oak regimen on the Chardonnay since you haven't tasted this wine?
No, exactly. Is it neutral barrel or are you using some new oak?
Actually, we use quite a bit of new oak. The average is about 50 to 60% new oak for the Chardonnays in general. 2006 was a little bit higher. But remember that the wines are lower in alcohol, and, you know, with less than 14%, you can incorporate more new oak and extract less of the toasted.
Right,
you know, the wine does not come across as oaky at all, you know. Because
right.
A lot of wines, you put your nose in the glass, and the first thing you smell is
right.
Wood and vanilla and anything but fruit.
Mm-hmm.
And we don't use a lot of toast, so that helps as well. Low alcohol, less toast. You can actually use the barrel as you should, which is to support the fruit and add some structure to the wine.
Well, Teresa and Bill, we're going to have to wrap things up here. We only have about 30 seconds left. Is there anything you would like to add?
Yeah, the last thing I'd like to say is that the general public is, you know, locals are welcome to come out to the guest center, which is located on the Bohemian Highway here in the town of Freestone, and they can pick up all the wines. We have the two Fog Dog Chardonnays at $40 a bottle. The Ovation Chardonnay is $60, and the Freestone Chardonnay and Pinot Noir are both $75 a bottle.
I want the case discount.
We'll talk.
Anyway, great to have you. Great to learn more about your operation. I absolutely love the wines. I gave the Pinot a 94. I gave the Chardonnay a 96. I think they're terrific, and I want to thank Lisa Redwine for helping me out today.
My pleasure.
Until next week, this is Robert Whitley for Whitley on Wine saying ciao.
And I mean, don't try to fool me.